Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio. Welcome, everybody, back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, and we are going to be talking about the part two version of the number one hack to scaling your business. And if you haven't listened to part one, you need to go back and listen to it. But the hack, I'm spoiling it right now. So if you haven't done part one, go back to it. But the hack is hiring virtual assistants to get your time back so you can focus on growth in your business. And so what I wanted to do in this episode is bring on an expert in VAs. This is Stephanie Figueros. I've known her for a few years now. She lives out of SoCal. She's got several short-term rental properties around the country, and that has inspired her to start a virtual assistant management company called Bravo Virtual Assistants. They help source and train virtual assistants for STR owners. And I'm just super excited to have her on here because, guys, she's figured out the formula. She's figured out all the secrets and everything you need to know on how you can get your time back as an owner so you can focus on scaling or simply being with your family. And so without further ado, Stephanie, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Stephanie Figueros. I am a former registered nurse, still technically licensed, but turned a real estate investor, entrepreneur, and realtor. I'm based here in Southern California. I specialize in short-term rentals, have a couple of properties in different places in the U.S., and I'm also the co-founder of STR Nation and Bravo Virtual Assistants.
Wow, lots going on there. So when did you get started in short-term rentals?
I got started about almost 3-4 years ago.
Okay, 3-4 years ago. And so you live in SoCal. What did you buy in SoCal first? Or I know you have properties in the Smokies, right? So like which came first, the chicken or the egg? The Smokies or the SoCal?
I actually had my first short-term rental in Southern California. So I've done kind of all the different strategies, co-hosting, arbitrage, owning, joint venturing. Prefer the owning part more than anything else. But I had my first rental here in SoCal, about 30 minutes away from me in a small town that nobody knows about. But I knew the area well enough to be like, someone will come and rent the place. And so it was then when I got my proof of concept doing the arbitrage. I think I just needed some confidence, to be quite honest, because it was the first time I've really got out of my comfort zone. Within honestly 2 months, I was like, I already had my down payment and stuff ready to go. I just needed that proof of concept. And then I decided that I wanted to spread what I had or maximize it. And that's why I decided at the beginning to go out of state.
Gotcha. Okay. So we're going to get to the VA part, but one thing that I think is really interesting about you, Stephanie, is you've taken a lot of like, you've done a lot, you've tried different things. Like you and Patrick Swinetech hosted conferences three years in a row. You know, obviously you bought short-term rentals around the country. You mentioned you did rental arbitrage, you did co-hosting. You're also a licensed realtor, you've done a lot. And now you're CEO and founder of a virtual assistant company. And so, mm-hmm. And it sounds like that this is a growing spot. I think you've been doing that for about a year now, right? Okay. So that's what we're going to be focusing on today. But I guess, tell me like your journey to get to this point of focusing on VAs, because it's been quite the journey, frankly. Like it's impressive. Like I'm like, man, I couldn't host a conference. I couldn't do that. And you're like knocking all these things out. So good on you. But I got to hear the journey that led you to being a CEO and founding this like Bravo Virtual Assistant company. So tell us.
Yeah. So honestly, it's funny because all I wanted at the very beginning of all of this was just to not rely on one stream of income. That was all it. That was the root of it. I liked nursing, but I also felt like I had a pull to do something besides that. I've always had. But it started with something very simple as I don't want to have to just rely on this. I want to see what else I can do and have multiple streams of income. So I kind of went down the side hustle route to, you know, I think I have a knack for this and I have the ability to learn. So I'm going to learn everything. And I freaking love learning. It's I think that's also why I try a lot of things, because when I try it too, like I don't just try it. I really do go all in on it. Like I want to just experience it for what it is, because why do it in the first place? So I actually got my realtor's license because I thought it was like the logical thing to do at the time. And honestly, I was totally fine just taking the education piece and not even getting my license. I just needed some sort of entry level course in a way to just real estate, even though my intention originally wasn't to do like the realtor residential stuff. It was more to just do my own deals and understand it, the lingo and whatnot better, which I actually realized it's helped me quite a bit, because I really learned what the transactions look like, and also negotiating. I learned that from the realtor side of me. But going into short-term rentals, I was trying to pick an asset class, and I actually got talked out of short-term rentals. Being in Southern California, I couldn't find at the time anybody that was really doing short-term rentals and liking it and doing it successfully. And I just kept looking and looking locally in person, and I couldn't really find anyone. And the one person I did find got banned in their one city. So it was kind of like, oh, I guess maybe this isn't for me. And so I kind of went through the shiny object syndrome of maybe I'll try wholesaling, maybe I'll do mobile home flipping, maybe I'll do this. And then it went full circle back to short-term rentals. And I think the reason why was because I did see examples it virtually, just other people were doing it. And I was like, okay, if they can do it, like, why can't I? Like, I just couldn't get over that, because I think everyone can do it. They just have to commit to it. And I was totally willing for that, to do that. So I had an opportunity to sell a property. It was actually family property. And I simply got the idea of, why are you selling such a great house? And they were like, we had really bad tenants. And so I gave a pitch from a YouTube video. I was like, I didn't even understand it completely. I just said, well, what if I become your tenant? I'll pay you no matter what happens. You know, I have a full-time job at the time. Like, you know where I live. I'm good for it. You allow me to rent it out as a short-term rental. And before I knew it, I was actually pitching like arbitrage. And I just wanted to try the short-term rental side of it. Like, I didn't care how I did it. I just needed confidence. And so after some convincing, they let me do it. So I was like, great. And then what's ironic was I actually did get banned from doing short-term rentals almost a year into it, because I was doing it in an HOA. So don't do what I did, but I didn't care. I was like, even if this flops, I just need the experience. Like, I'll figure it out. I had exit strategies that I could do, and 2 months in, I was like, okay, this works. Like, I can do this. This is as bad as it seems. But I needed to make my systems way better, because I'm showing up to this place way too much and I have other stuff to do. So then I went out of state, basically maxed out my debt to income ratio with my job, and finally was able to get some traction. And then that's kind of when the verticals kind of started happening. Like, oh, you want me to run?
Is that when you bought the Smokies place?
Yeah, it was a little bit afterwards, because I am in also Crystal Beach, Texas as well. So I also have something there, and I just kept growing it. And then just, I realized and people don't do this a lot. They'll do stuff, but then they don't know, they don't audit themselves. And I tend to do that with myself, like at least twice a year. I'll just ask myself, am I on the right path of where I'm trying to be? So that's also why I try stuff. And then if it doesn't quite continue to align with where I'm at, because I'm okay with stuff being temporary too. It doesn't always have to be forever, because they always gain something from experience. So before I knew it, in order to continue, because I like doing different things, I'm just one of those people that can't sit still, I suppose. But I realized I couldn't do it all by myself, so I needed to get help. And that's kind of what led me to virtual assistants. I started just doing it by myself. I didn't really have anybody. I talked to people, but I was like, okay, I've precepted, I've trained people in the nursing field. So, you know, like, I can do this. Why can't I teach someone to get my time back? And so I think when I realized, though, the biggest key thing for me was the time difference between being in SoCal and like one of my properties in the Smokies, or a couple of them, it's 3-hour difference. And I'd have to get up at 5 a.m. just to check my phone no matter what, because I was always on edge that I'd miss something. And that's led to the VA side. And then I'd realized how much having a virtual assistant, I have a couple of them, quite frankly, they help me in every parts of my life. So it's like literally who, not how. And it's cool because it turned into people just asking me about it more and more. And we can go more into that bit, but, and that's kind of just what led me to this thing where I see a real big need for it too, because I see a lot of people that were just like me who needed somebody yesterday and they waited way too long. And I can see that, man, you don't have to struggle this hard. And so I honestly, probably this is one of the most exciting ventures for me, because to me, it's impacting two lives. It's impacting the virtual assistant and it's impacting the business owner. So it's a really cool thing to see and witness and be a part of.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people see investing in short-term rentals as a way, and maybe they were lied to or whatever from a YouTube video, but like it's passive income. And for all of us who have properties, especially short-term rentals, we know it's not. And there's a lot of like active management and doing things with it. And I feel like the physicians, the high W-2 income earners who just don't have a lot of time, they're like, well, crap, like now I have to deal with guests and worry about all these different things and paranoid about the reviews and all these other things. And the reality is like, there is a way, you know, you have technology, but you can hire a virtual assistant. And I think that especially with, if you're looking at getting a second or you have two or more, you are starting to create a job for yourself because it's going to be sucking a lot of your time. And so we're not doing this. Well, you shouldn't be doing this in my opinion. And it's okay if you are, I guess, to do short-term rentals as a job or you're trying to get your time back, right? I think you kind of mentioned that earlier. And so with VAs, it allows you to free that time up so that you can focus on the things that you maybe like to do or not focus on your short-term rentals all the time. Anyway, so let's talk about VAs. And so first off, are your VAs all in the Philippines or where are they located?
Yep. So they're all in the Philippines. They're in different islands in the Philippines. So they're kind of all spread out.
Okay. So they're all in the Philippines and I kind of already know the answer. So bear, like, you know, I'm trying to speak to the base and the people who are listening, but they're in the Philippines. Do they speak English?
They do. And it's funny because a lot of Asian countries will actually go to the Philippines to learn English because I don't know what it is, but Filipinos just know. The accent isn't as present compared to a lot of other Asian cultures. So yeah, they can speak English. It's taught in schools.
Right. And I feel like there too, they, in the Philippines particularly, they have a very heavy American influence on their English. So although, yes, a lot of them have some sort of accent, like Filipino accent, some of them don't. And it's kind of crazy if you speak to one that's like really good, you're like, are you from the Philippines? Or are you from the States? Like, you know, like it's hard to tell. And I think that's really advantageous. But so they speak English and they speak English well. I think we got that covered. But for you, when you're thinking about hiring a VA, let's take it to all the way to the beginning again. So we know that, okay, they're on the other side of the world. So how does that work? Like, do they work all kinds of hours, or they only work certain hours, like their day hours, which are nights? Like, how does that work? How do you like, I mean, is that a conflict? Like, what do your VAs do?
Yeah. So it's a very common question. Actually, a lot of people get concerned about the time difference. And the truth is a lot of Filipino remote workers, they're used to those hours. Most of their remote clients happen to be in the US more often than not. And they actually prefer that shift. So it's about a 16 hour difference. So our daytime is their nighttime and vice versa. And I've used to work a night shift myself, actually. So I can understand like why somebody would want to like that type of role. But they work whatever the business requires are the hours that they work. So you can dictate, and it's always about expectations, right? So if you let them know this is from this hour to this hour, you know, they'll pick and choose if it's a role that they want to take. But that is honestly like the least, should be the least of your worries. They're totally used to it and they're fine with it. And like I've even had two VAs want the same shift where over there it was the night shift, not the day shift, because it allows them to do stuff they want in the daytime. So yeah, it's not as big of a deal as people make it seem.
Yeah, no, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. And I might be going out of order in questions, but I'm just thinking of them as you say things and they pop into my head, especially as someone who's thinking about hiring. I think most of our listeners should definitely consider it. But at what point should you consider hiring a VA?
You know, I honestly have this saying that there's no business that's too big or too small to get help. We've actually had someone who had no properties and they simply just wanted to get set up from like the ground up, right, with the systems already in place. And now they've scaled to 3 properties because they got help from the very beginning. So I think it's a very personal answer because there's also a lot of variables into this, right? There's budget. There's, do you have time at this moment to train? Some people think they're worried that they're not going to have enough for their VA to do. And I'm like, well, you're limiting what you think what they're capable of doing. And you don't have to have them full time. You can have them only for maybe a few hours a day just to get something off your plate.
I want to stop right there. Okay. Sorry to interrupt you. That's really, really important what you just said, because I hear that a lot from people. They're like, well, if I hire a VA, how am I going to give them 8 hours of work a day? What do you tell them?
You have to. I mean, trust me when I say you'll want to. And it's because because people just, again, limiting beliefs. Remember, if it can be learned or done on a computer, it can be done anywhere. So there's really no reason why you should have things. I call them fallback tasks. One of the common things is that it's feast or famine sometimes with the short-term rentals when it comes to communications with guests and vendors. So a lot of people will kind of do like an executive assistant / property manager VA where it's a hybrid role. So they're basically your personal assistant that helps you on the administrative side of things. And they also happen to do guest communications in between. So you can create whatever job role you want for someone. And you can try maybe, I say 4 hours because you get more out of the 4 hour window, like 4 hours every day versus maybe 2, to actually feel the difference of having somebody there. And if you want to upgrade your VA later to full-time, I've seen people do that a lot. And I think it's good because it gives you some time because it's a learning curve for both sides. Most of the time though, I find if you're very new at it, it's more of a learning curve for you than it is for them.
Yeah. A lot of them already have experience doing it. So you're hiring somebody who already knows Airbnb. Maybe they've even worked for Airbnb, which is a huge advantage. I had one give me like ways to like fight reviews and like the process and stuff, because his like cousin or something worked for Airbnb and they had like a whole like flow chart thing. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I'm sure it's changed since then. But I think from my perspective, so I have VAs in my business and with my short-term rentals too. I have found that the VAs, like they're, and maybe it's a cultural thing in the Philippines or whatever, but they're very task driven. So like kind of what you mentioned, like if you can train a computer, you can train someone else to do something. Like it's like, especially repetitive tasks. And so in America, we're all like paying people by the hour. But I think with hiring a VA, you have to turn that off. And it's like paying a VA per task they do, not per message they send or respond to or whatever, but like handling your communication. Because like you said, it's feast or famine, right? Like you might get a ton of messages or you might not have any messages at all, but you need someone to be there in case that happens and you just don't know. And it's like, don't worry about having to fill their hours and focus on like, what is that task being completed and off my plate worth it to me to in order like to pay? Like what's that amount I'm willing to pay for that? If you think like that, the whole hourly thing and worrying about hours and all that is just like, it goes away. And then the second thing I'll say on that note is that it's very, very common that VAs have multiple jobs. So like I have a VA and they're full-time 8 hours, but she also has another job too. So she works like 14 hours. She told me she works 14 hour days. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty crazy. And has a kid and all this other stuff. And I was like, well, like, and she's like you can pay me more money, but I'm still going to go work this other job. And I was like, I'm like, as long as you get done what I need you to get done, you know, like I like that. And that's the mentality we have to have. We can't be like, we own this person and their soul. It doesn't work like that. And it's just a different mindset than like what we're used to in the United States, where they're like full on W-2 employees and they only have one job, you know, and all this stuff. Like they work multiple jobs or have multiple clients. And it's more about being task driven and making sure that they're getting what you need accomplished and you're happy with that. Stephanie, what do you say to all that? What are your thoughts on that?
So, I mean, yeah, sometimes they do have multiple roles. It's funny because I know how important it is, especially on the US side, to feel that sense of like, you're dedicated to me, right? I don't know why, but some people feel the sense of betrayal when they find out, or if they find out that they have another role elsewhere. At least in Bravo, we do have it to where we make sure that if it's a full-time role, that they don't have another client, unless it's like a interesting thing where it's a full-timer, but we know that multiple clients will share that one VA depending on the role that they have. So it's funny you say that though, because a lot of US clients do have this sense of like, I just want them to only be for me. And if they find out that they have another role elsewhere, they're like, but why? And it's like,
they're cheating on me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. But so at Bravo, what we do, because I understand that I'm here myself, is if they're full-time, we have it in our contract with the VAs that they're not going to have a different job elsewhere. Now, obviously, will they still do stuff? They're people, like, but they'll know the expectation is that you are committed to this. And we have stuff in writing with them. It's a contract that we can enforce in the Philippines. But if they're part-timers where they're not working a full-time job, we do let people know ahead of time, like, they might have other roles because they have to be able to put food on the table. So just like how it is here, if what they have isn't cutting it, if it's only a 4-hour workday, they're going to split their time with someone else. Unless you decide to make them full-time and they're good with whatever they're getting, then different story. But I do find that there's two types of VAs, though. I do think that there's doers where, and I think honestly, this isn't just VAs. This is kind of people. They just like to push the button. They like to just stay within color within the lines. They like to know what to do. These are that type of person. Just they like that. That's how they are. They're task driven. But there are people in VAs too that they're thinkers, and they like to be able to come up with solutions. And I think this kind of goes down to personality and fit and what the role requires, because a lot of these VAs are able to basically, if you give them kind of parameters and what the end result is that you want, they can build out and create whatever it is that you need to create, and you don't have to be the one to do it. So I do have VAs that are like that, who, and I actually encourage, because I'm the type of person, I don't like micromanaging. I like the end result. Just however you get it done, just make sure it fits these parameters. And by this date, you know, off you go. So I always try to empower my VAs to just, and it takes a lot of reassurance too, to think. I want them to think like me without being my clone necessarily, but I want them to be thinkers. So I personally do encourage that to virtual assistants. And I find that if it's the type of role that needs that type of critical thinking, then I encourage it versus them just being super checklist oriented. But we do have those, and those are probably like one of the easiest entry level ways to set a VA up, is just to have them start with repeatable tasks. And it's easier for you too, because it's kind of like, don't bite the whole pie at once, right? Or eat the whole thing, just bit by bit. And it's better for everybody. So the more advanced tasks can come later.
No, that makes sense. So what are, obviously, I think the biggest one that people like worry about is their guest messaging and like dealing with guests in the middle of the night and stuff like that. And that's like a big relief off their shoulders. But like, what other types of tasks can people use VAs for in their businesses, their short-term rental businesses?
Yeah. So I'll speak from personal experience. Like my VAs do all the resupply orders. We kind of have a reoccur. They know what cards are associated with which properties. And we have like an inventory list of like things that we will repeatedly buy. They'll do vendor contacts. So if they'll do contractor bids. I taught them how to do that. So if something happens with plumbing, they know what to say and what to ask for and how that workflow looks like. They'll do review audits. So I try my best to, we always have to, it's sometimes you lose track after some time with your reviews and just with your listings in general. So they'll do listing optimization and just audits on the properties. We do meetings where we see, okay, what else can we do with the houses to improve on our systems? They'll build SOPs. What else do they do? They'll do some light marketing too. So they can go into Facebook groups and post the properties. I have a list of groups that they can either do this through my account. I usually have them do it through our account. It's just easier that way. And they'll go and they'll post. I'm like, what else do they do? They do also sometimes, I have some JV partners, so they'll help with the invoicing creations or the statements, I should say. And they'll also help with remitting like Avalara mileage tax. They kind of do that. I taught them how to do it, so I don't have to do it. Email management. I'm like, what else? The short-term rental specific. Honestly, they do like almost every, at this point, I've built them to be able to, like I went out of town and they were able to fully do it themselves. I prepped for that it was like almost a month that I went on vacation, and they were able to handle it. And they, I gave them full authority and reign to, I believe in you, make good decisions. And it was a buildup to that, though. It doesn't happen overnight. So, but they can essentially almost become your own co-host. What's kind of cool is that they don't get 1099. So you still are technically self-managing because you are overseeing them at the end of the day. You still have to manage your people no matter what, whether this is virtual or not. But they can manage quite a bit of almost every single task because I do this remotely in California. So there's really no reason why somebody else in a different area couldn't do this remotely too. They have all the tools, phone numbers, all of my account numbers for internet. If the internet goes down, they can call, they pretend to be me, but they can go and troubleshoot that themselves and I don't have to get involved in that anymore.
Yeah, that's great. I think like co-hosts are expensive. It's 15 to 20% of your gross revenue. Like I don't, with the VAs and the power and things that you can train them and do with them, I just don't understand nowadays why people, besides they just don't have the time, which leads me to a very important question. And I think we have to talk about this is how much time do you need to take to get a VA ready and trained? Because you do have to invest into them. And that's a mistake people, they think I can just find somebody and they take it off my plate and they know everything and I'm good to go. Like how much time, what's your regiment, the training regiment before they're like up to speed and able to do some of these tasks for you?
Yes, I love this question because honestly, I see a lot of people kind of, they come in with and thinking this is a magic pill. And I'm like, No, it's not. Like this takes time. And it's good that it takes time because you didn't learn how to run your own business overnight. So I give the analogy, you know, whether you worked at Stater Brothers or Albertsons, if you go to a Ralph's, you're still going to get trained like as if you don't know anything. And that's the right way to do it, if you ask me. I assume nothing, regardless of experience. And all it really means is that they have a shorter learning curve. But it's your job as, you know, the business owner to make sure that you have everything they could possibly need to do well. Or really at the end of the day, it's on you. So I always tell people, build your curriculum. If there's one thing you can possibly do now before getting somebody on board is to really outline like how you're going to integrate them, regardless if you go with an agency or freelancer. So I do a ramp style. It takes about 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks. And it's very incremental. So week one, you're the one providing all access to your tools. So I give them their own email, their own phone number, basically almost everything that they could possibly have portal-wise, but they still have access to the main accounts because sometimes they just have to go into it and it's not a big deal. So we go over tech, we go over all the tech stacks. Sometimes depending on, like I've hosted away from my channel manager. I actually had them train my VAs. And if you ask, they'll do it.
Yeah, we had, so I'm going to let people in on a little secret. I have OwnerRes, but I don't know how to use OwnerRes. I had my VA. I was like, I looked at it and I was like, there's no way I'm going to do this.
You know what? I have OwnerRes too. I don't know how you feel.
You go and figure this crap out and like just handle it. And they've watched all the videos. They go to all the trainings, everything. And I don't know anything about like, people are like, oh, like how do you? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, so yeah, I love that. Yeah.
I actually like that you do that because I did that too. Like I knew how to use it because it's not that bad, but I'll learn it, but I don't know everything about it. And so I'll have you, like we're talking about leverage here. You can literally leverage the company themselves either through their own tutorial videos, or you can ask somebody, hey, because I was actually switching channel managers at the time. So I had to onboard. So I just had them to join the class with me and do it and have their own session separate from myself. So the first week is just, we go over the technology piece, all the apps. I make sure that they download everything that needs to be computer or on their phone. So Ring cameras, Sage locks. I use iAqualink to heat my pool, the Nest. Like they have the same things I have on my phone, except now I can slowly start to turn those notifications off because they have a handle on it. So week one is just about the tech stuff. And I pre-recorded videos on the markets themselves. Like I go very in detail with my VAs, and you should. So we do a market level overview and I use like a Loom videos and then do it off of a PowerPoint that I created once. And then we do the houses themselves. And we go down to the types of guests that visits, you know, because everyone has an avatar. And I've learned that Texans are different than people from New Jersey, stuff like that. So then we go into vendors. And this is the last thing I let them have rain with. So on week one, we're talking about the tech stuff. And then we're talking, and then they can watch videos on the properties and the markets. I have video walkthroughs for every single property, opening up everything. Like, this is what happens when the power goes out. This is where the breaker is. This is what it looks like when the guests open it. So they always have a video reference. And then we have a property master list, which I tell everybody you should totally have one. And it's not just like your people say, oh, they can just look at my listing. And I said, that's not enough. Do they know what your account number is if there's a power outage? Do they know the two to call? Do they know the filter size if they have to reorder filters? Like, do they know where the lockbox backups are located and what keys are in there? Like, we have to be detailed. They have to know everything if you expect them to be able to not ask you, or else you'll be the bottleneck. And I've made that mistake. So on week two, that is finally when I start to give them access to talk to guests. And we go down to like, what's the difference between a trip request and inquiry? So I used to do a lot of precepting. So I actually like the training part. I think it's fun, but that's just what we'll do on week one. And then week two is guest communications. Week three is we kind of do overflow of week one and two. And then week four is when we start to talk to vendors. Your vendors are your MVPs, right? So I make sure that they're ready to talk to them and how to talk to them too. And their personalities, like, and how they communicate. Because if the vendors aren't happy, then, you know, it makes life much harder for everybody. So, and then they know that because they'll be the ones to have to talk to them. So, and then introducing them to my vendors. Ironically, one of my cleaners seriously thought that when I told her, oh, I have a virtual assistant that's going to become the new point of contact. I'm still here. However, you're going to start hearing from them more than you will from me. She seriously thought it was AI. She did not know this was a real person. I was like, no, they're human.
They're very human. Yeah.
She didn't know that. She thought it was an AI talking to her. And I'm like, oh, okay. I guess this is why you don't assume anything. And I do it one property at a time. And then that's kind of like the bulk of the 4 weeks. I say up to six because it depends on the pacing of how well you do the trainings and then how many properties you have to get through too. So, but realistically, like, it's going to take at least a couple months, I'd say, like 1 to 3 months for not just them, but mostly you to be comfortable with. The one thing though is you want to be supportive, but you don't want to micromanage them because they'll lose confidence if you question and be on top of them for everything. And what ends up happening is that they just habitually start to seek approval from you because you're the one giving the vibes of, oh, you know, maybe I'm not doing this right. And so I had to backtrack and course correct and tell my VAs, hey, you know what? I think I need to back off of you guys. Because they don't want to hurt your feelings. So they're not going to tell you you're being overbearing. Unless you have a, you know, a high DVA, that's just, we'll give it to you straight. And maybe you need that sometimes. But it's an investment. But it's worth doing because if you don't do it, what's it going to cost you? Is how I see it now.
Yeah, I love that. I was going to say, I was kind of like, all of this tells us and points to, like, when you hire someone, it's not just you hiring someone and you're bringing somebody on that's just going to learn and know everything, but you have to invest in it. You have to invest the time and energy. And if you're not going to do that, then it's just not going to be successful. You're setting yourself up and them for failure. And so you have to be willing to invest. And there are some learning pain, growing pains there too, I think, for a lot of people. Like, all the stuff you were mentioning, I thought that was really interesting. Like, oh, wow, like the door codes, you know, like, the where the spare keys are and like the vendor, like people don't realize how much they know about their property and the information about it. And like sharing that with another individual, it's like, whoa, like I assume that they kind of already knew, but you know, it's like, you don't really know everything that you know about your property. Like, and so I think that that's one of the hardest things for people. So it's like lesson, you have to invest. If you're going to do this, you got to commit to it and invest in it. But man, does it pay off at the end?
It works. It totally works. You just got to go through. You just have to know ahead of time that you're going to commit. Like I literally tell this to people, you have to go into this, not just to try it. Cause I feel like when people say they'll try something, sometimes what they're really saying is that I'll put one foot in, but I'm gonna keep one foot out just in case. And I'm like, no, you need to put your foot off, get in there because this person, like you are the reason whether you'll make or break them. True. Honestly, how good you are as their leader will make or break you.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I do want to go over real quick and briefly talk about how do you, so we can talk about your services. So first off, like your company, so tell us what you offer and tell us like, how can one go about, whether it's using you guys or other methods, to find the right VAs? Like, what's that process and everything?
Sure, sure. So at the end of the day, I tell everyone, just get help. However you do it is just do it. That's the goal.
I will say though, let me add to that though, like get help, but like there are a lot of like different services out there and they're incredibly expensive. Okay. So like, it's important. Like I'm bringing Stephanie on here for our listeners. I'm bringing her on here because like, I know about her services. I know what she offers and I know how affordable it is. And I know I'm very like, I have VAs that work for me. I've been doing this for a while. So I know like market rates and everything. And I know the different companies out there. And so her services can be trusted and used, and they're very competitive in pricing and things. But what I guess, Stephanie, what I kind of want to know is like, how does someone go about vetting the right VA and also service too?
Yes, yes. Very important. That's usually like the biggest thing is that sense of trust, and totally understandable. But there's like really two ways to go about acquiring a VA. You can do it freelancer route where you're going direct to them, onlinejobs.ph, Upwork, Fiverr, those are examples, sometimes even Facebook groups, or you can go the agency route. And there's plenty of different ones out there. And there's typically two types of agencies. There's the ones that are essentially headhunters. They just outsource, but they don't help you manage the VA afterwards. So it's all you, but they'll help source it. And then there's ones that will not just source and recruit, but they'll also help with the managing ongoing. And that's what we do at Bravo. And we find that's much better too, for a lot of reasons. But when you're vetting, so like all our process is we verify like who their previous employers were. We want to know if they're actually still working. Obviously their resume, their background. We don't do criminal background checks. Most people don't do that part. But we do make sure that they do have the experience that they claim that they do have by talking to their references and so on and so forth. And we do have, I forget what it's called, but there's like it's specific to the Philippines. That's kind of like a background check, but not as like DOJ status of a background check. And that's one thing. Now there's always ways to mitigate, obviously, regardless of it too, like password management tools like LastPass, Bitwarden. There's a lot of stuff like that. But you want to align with someone that it's all about fit at the end of the day. It's never about capabilities is what we've learned. It's just, is this a good fit for the role? And is that VA a good fit for the role required? It goes both ways. So we figure out what their internet speeds are. It's part of our process. Their English speaking, like how they speak. We do video introductions pre-recorded ahead of time so everyone can see how they speak before they even interview the VA. Typing test, even equipment. Some people want to make sure that they have their iPhones versus Androids. I don't require it, but I prefer iPhone people. What else do I do? That could be another argument, depending.
When the rest of the outside world uses Android, the Americans are like, you have to have iPhone.
Yeah, I know. It's like, look, as long as it's not like archaic, you know, as long as you can download apps, then we're good. But I always joke because it's either we either have team iPhone or the people that are like, get out of here. But and on top of that, so like for us at Bravo, it's kind of funny because I do short-term rentals, about 80% of our clients are short-term rental people. And I wasn't even trying to make it that way, to be honest, but we just tend to attract it. So otherwise we have small business owners, we have realtors, we have other types of businesses. We even have a physician too. It's kind of interesting, but 80% are short-term rentals. So we because of that, I'm like, yeah, that's up our alley all day long. And a lot of the VAs, when they're coming on, because we have an in-house academy within Bravo too. So these are people who they want to become VAs and they want to basically get their footing through the door, learn the trade. I'm actually very like biased to new people, but we also have a very experienced pool of virtual assistants too, for those that need like 5+ years of experience. So trust is always something that just takes time. And most of it is actually on you because most people, if you're coming in, it's just like dating. If you're coming in with this predisposition that, you know, you're going to get burned or something like that, you're the one carrying that, not the VA. So you have to be very cognizant of yourself and give everybody a chance because at the end of the day, they deserve it. So, but attrition is real. And the nice thing with agencies is that we know that. I've gone through this by myself without the agency route. And having to go back to the drawing board can be very time consuming and can be discouraging. But we know that if it's not a good fit, it doesn't mean it doesn't work. You just need to have a different personality or just a different person. So like for us, we don't, once you're with us, we don't charge anything extra to go back to the drawing board to get a different VA or to add more VAs. So that's something that does separate us, because a lot of other agencies, they'll charge per person, per different person, every time you have to swap them out. So we know that's part of it, but we have a matching, as we call it, like, it's like matching, it's like dating. We have profile matching with the clients, and then we let them at the end of the day choose between the top 3 to 5 candidates who they want to interview. And the one thing too, I'll add is that if you want to for yourself, you can give your own assessment to a VA, like a candidate, and have them take certain tests. And we're fine with it. I don't know what other agencies do, but we do have some folks in a different mastermind who they all have the same test for their candidate. So it's funny because we learned that, oh, this, if they come from this mastermind, then they're like always testing their candidate VAs with this specific test. So I think that usually helps with vetting, because you'll see how they answer a question. And that's usually what people need to see when they're hiring somebody. It's not just their paper. It's just how do they think is what I feel like it comes down to.
Yep. Yep. No, I love it. Okay. So what, if people are interested in your services, how do they get in touch? Where do they need to go to learn more?
Yeah. So it's pretty simple. It's bravovirtualassistance.com. There's a calendar and a VA request form that you have to fill out. So once you fill out the VA request form, the better detail it is, the better. It just helps us get a better sense of what you're looking for. It will lead to a calendar to schedule a call with our team. That way we can dive deep into it, and we move pretty fast. So it depends on your pacing. Some people need a little bit more time to set up, but you can honestly get, once you have that call, you can probably get somebody at least within a week after. So we have a pretty, very like step-by-step process of what our flow looks like. And you're not tied to anything until you decide you hire someone. So there's really no risk on your part. If you're really looking to get help, I say it's in your benefit to just call and you'll start to see the difference. But the one thing I will say, and I've learned this myself, there's nothing wrong with doing the freelancing route. I think it's kind of depends on what's a good fit for you. But you are having to be the end all be all. So you are payroll, you are HR, you are trainer, you are manager, all of that. But if you want your VA to learn a new skill or you need help or something, you're not just hiring one VA with an agency, you're literally hiring the whole team. So we have coaches in-house that will help the VAs. They have their own mastermind that they conduct so that they can get better at their trade. And then when a lot of the common things we get with STR VAs is that their clients want them to help with marketing. So we do in-house training with them, Go High Level. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's really nice because you can do email campaigns and so on and so forth. So you get to leverage the leverager is the best way to put it. I obviously now I don't have to go and look for VAs. I could literally just go in-house and have my, like, if I need a VA for a certain thing, I can, you know, they go to my own payroll that I do out of myself, and it's just much easier. So, but we love this. It's such a fun thing to see. You're giving opportunities when you hire a VA, like you become the job creator. And honestly, I think people don't realize that that's like, what they want to be as an entrepreneur is they don't want to have to be the one doing the job, but creating it. So you're doing that when you hire a virtual assistant, because then you can go scale your business to, or you could just do whatever you want really, or you can do more and you can hire more and then give opportunities to people. So it's really cool to see.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing. So if you're interested in learning more about her services, go to bravovirtualassistance.com. Stephanie, as we kind of wrap up here, last question I love to ask every single guest who comes on. It could be about VAs. It can be about anything. You have a ton of good short-term rental experience. What is one way that you recommend people on how they can cash flow positive with their short-term rentals?
Work with Kenny. I'm just kidding. Well, on top of that, I personally think you have to get very educated with the type of investment that you want to be in. Know your numbers. And know what your goals are, because I think people will, when they don't know what they want, they go off of what somebody else wants. And then they realize later, maybe that's not what aligned with them in the first place. So this is like the realtor side coming out, because I always tell people, look, there's no right or wrong answer, but what is your financial goal with this asset you're trying to acquire? And that will give you more clarity on if it's the right investment for you. So I that's my answer.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. That was really good advice. And guys, if you're interested, I think, frankly, most of you who have at least two properties, you need to be reaching out to Stephanie and giving her a call and sitting down and learning what you can do. Because I've talked to a lot of you guys, and I know you're begging for some of your time back, and you're busy people and individuals, and the co-host stuff, just, it's expensive. Don't do it. Let's get a VA. Let's get it going. I do it. Stephanie does it. If we can do it, I say this all the time, if I can do it, and I feel like I'm not that special, you can do it too. So anyway, well, Stephanie, thank you so much for being on the show. Really, really enjoyed this. I think this will be really helpful for everybody listening. And if you've enjoyed this, guys, if you could please go in and leave me a 5-star review, that'd be much appreciated. I love reading your reviews and your feedback. And anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I will see you on the next episode of Cashflow Positive.